Hello, and a really warm welcome to Successful Student Transitions, where we aim to provide support and inspiration for teens and young adults as they step out of school, college, into the world of work and further education. I'm Louise Wiles, and I'm here today with my co-host, Elizabeth Gillies. And welcome to the last episode in this series, Lean into Student Life. Now, this series has been devoted to supporting first-year students as they settle into uni life. If you're a parent or educator listening, please forward this on to anyone you know who is settling into uni. And if you're a student in your first year, you're in the right place and a very warm welcome. You'll be nearing the end of the first term now, and we really hope it's been a positive start to your uni experience. We know that for many, these initial weeks, even months, can be a bit of a roller coaster ride, and we're here to support you. If you've been following the series, you'll know that in each episode we share 5 tips to support you practically and emotionally and give you the know-how and confidence boost you need to not just survive but thrive in your first year. And if you're keen to catch up on any of the past episodes, then we've created something special for you, an online space where you can go and review the content of these episodes using the show notes. They're packed with reflection questions and some additional resources designed to support you on this journey. You can register for free access to the series via successfulstudenttransitions.com/lean-in. So let's get on with this episode. So it's December, and we're guessing that as you head into the final weeks of your first term, some of the academic realities are beginning to set in. You maybe have faced some academic highs and lows. You may have found yourself procrastinating when things have become a little challenging, and maybe found yourself trying to work out how to adjust to this new learning environment. And if this is the case for you, then know that you're not alone. The transition to university life and all that it entails includes that academic adjustment as well, of course. Now, in this episode, we share 5 practical tips to help you navigate these academic challenges, to help you develop a positive approach to learning and lay the foundation for long-term academic success. So whether you're struggling with perfectionism, finding it hard to ask for help, or simply trying to establish good study routines, this episode offers evidence-based strategies and compassionate guidance to support you through this transitional period. Remember, challenge is where growth comes from, and learning to thrive through academic difficulties is a really valuable skill that's going to serve you not just through your university life, but throughout your life in general. So let's start with a look at what students tell us are some of the challenges they face in the early weeks and months of university, starting with the first one, academic disappointment. Now, perhaps you've always been a straight A or A star student, and suddenly you realise you're not the only one. There are lots of people around you who are really good too. And so that kind of raises the challenge a little bit for you academically.
And Louise, as well, there might be that kind of fear of failure. There might be that part of you that's a bit of a perfectionist. You might feel that you're never good enough. You worry about failing, which is quite a common experience.
Yes. Yeah. And I think especially if you've been in a normal UK or American education system where the answer is, you know, to get things right. It can sometimes go wrong not to get things right. And I guess, you know, in a new academic environment, you're struggling to work out what the new standards are. You know, what do you need to do to get a certain grade? And perhaps as you're thinking about this, you then overread, you overdo everything just to be sure. But that then puts an awful lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, and that sort of going down rabbit holes, like sometimes we talk about, is can lead to, you know, and not understanding fully maybe some of the criteria of assessments and things. It can lead to a high level of academic anxiety. It's leading you to want to try and ignore it and not do it, or that procrastination that we sometimes talk about and not getting down to the work that you need to do. So that anxiety can get in the way as well.
And I guess because this is set within the context of getting to know new people, new social situation, you might actually not be getting down to any studying at all. You're too busy, perhaps, out socializing by now, night and sleeping by day. Yet we know that's how it can be. I remember having times like that when I was at uni. It's great fun, but we know deep down it can't continue.
And we're also aware that in some universities, that face-to-face, in-person education, some of it is not happening. So you're maybe on Zoom or on your computer a bit, and that also might lead to you having lots of free time and time to self-study, if that's what it's been labelled as, which might lead up to no study and having a better or a different time doing other things.
And that makes me think that, you know, at uni versus kind of the school college scenario, perhaps more relaxed at college, but you know, there was a lot more face-to-face. In uni, perhaps not so much face-to-face. So it's more difficult to feel you belong and to feel that you are part of an academic community. It takes longer for that to form, I think.
And bigger classes as well. That's the issue. So they're much bigger classes, and the person that you might meet one time you're going to lecture, you might not meet them again.
Mm-hmm. True.
And you're also likely facing some organisation challenges, which is really a function of your new life and trying to fit all these things that we've talked about. Remember, we were talking about the fundamentals in a previous series. So you're trying to kind of create all those routines and do your shopping and do your exercise and get some rest. So you're doing a lot, and it won't be surprising that setting up good work habits could be difficult.
And perhaps you're feeling a bit bored. You know, perhaps you're finding that the course isn't quite what you thought it was advertised to be. And certainly in the first term, there's often a lot of repetition of A-level IB content because the universities are conscious that students come often from all over the world. There are some international students and people have different backgrounds, and they have to bring everyone up to the same level of knowledge. So great. So a mix of challenges there. And as we said at the beginning, they are all pretty normal for this stage in the experience. So today we're going to share 5 tips to help you get your head around things and hopefully happily get your head into your books, at least for some of the time. So tip one, Elizabeth, what's that?
So tip one today is challenge and stretch are normal and to be expected. Embrace it and become anti-fragile. So on one hand, we live in a world facing major challenges. On the other, we live highly comfortable lives. Comfort is the norm, and we seek to stay within our comfort zones. And yet, challenge is where growth comes from. The reality is change or disruption and the associated challenges will become the norm, and we need to get better at living in an ever-changing and complex world. So we need not only to be resilient, but also develop what Halab calls anti-fragility, the ability to thrive and grow, not just survive or cope, through times of disruption and change. And we have to know that we have the potential capability, both psychologically and physically. We just need to learn and trust that we can grow through challenge and challenging experiences. You know, and you are living in a new environment now and coping with a different approach to learning. It will certainly feel uncomfortable at times, and there will be some struggle. There'll be disappointment and panics, but these are valuable lessons that you can learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like work by a guy called Eric Karpinski, who's author of Put Happiness to Work. And he says that it's really helpful to think about stress as a continuum. So if you draw a line and you have a continuum, one end you've got threat and the other you have challenge. And so he says it's absolutely true and pretty normal that a challenging or stressful situation can create a threat response. And at those times, you might feel you don't have the resources to meet the challenge you're facing. And when that happens, you can experience a threat response. Your blood is shunted away from the reasoning and complex thinking part of the brain as you cope with that threat. And this inhibits your ability to think clearly and believe that you can solve problems. And as a result, you might find yourself procrastinating, distracting, running away from actually getting down to what you know deep down you need to do. And if you feel this happening, it can help to approach the situation differently. And he suggests using what he calls a challenge response, which is the other end of the stress continuum. And with a challenge response, yeah, the difficulty is still there, but rather than seeing the situation as one to be fearful of, it helps to see it as a challenge from which to learn. So the idea is to try your best and see that your efforts can and will make a difference. So the important thing about this kind of response is that it activates a different set of body processes, providing more oxygen and energy to the brain so we can process information, see the big picture, and act as we need to do in that situation. So really what you're doing is understanding that stress isn't inherently bad. It can help people shift from a threat to challenge response in order to see that that threat is not inherently bad.
Louise, when you're kind of saying that, I kind of think of those visual illusions sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, but yes, how we perceive it is differently. So it's a good thing. The thing is still the same. The visual illusion is still the same, but we can interpret it. There's that one of the duck and the rabbit, and depending on how you view it, you see something different. So you might help yourself kind of make this shift from a threat to a challenge. How do you become flexible within that? So you could ask yourself, when I have to start something new or different or challenging before, what did I do? What knowledge, skills, and strength did I use? And what could I use now? Because it's for certain you've been through this before. And when we see it's a challenge, you're going to be able to access those kind of bits of your brain that are going to problem solve. What's the one thing I could do to get started now? Simple questions to ask yourself. So what's tip two, Louise, today?
So tip two, so as you find some challenge perhaps that you feel uncomfortable about, I think it's really important to ask for help. But then also the other side of learning is to embrace what's termed in the research fields around this academic humility. So how good are you at asking for help? You know, I know I'm pretty terrible at it. I struggle on alone, feeling the pressure and become really surprised when others offer to help. And I know this is really something I need to work on. And I know I'm not alone though. Research has shown that we, and I mean the general human population, not just students, don't ask for help enough. We tend to assume that people will see us as lesser than if we are forced to ask for help. But research has shown the opposite is true. And moreover, in relation to academic work, intellectual humility is an asset. There's some work by Professor Tennell Porter, who's in the US, and it says that intellectual humility is about acknowledging your limitations and recognizing that you don't know everything, you're not infallible, and other people know things that you don't. And that's quite true, isn't it? We can all rationally think and see that. So then we have to wonder why we don't actually do it. You know, we're often reluctant to let on to people that we don't know things in case they think we're silly. And our education system is set up to compete. We're asked to be right all the time for the exam and be the best we can with our right answers. So it's not, you know, it's totally understandable that we feel we can't admit to being wrong often. But the irony is that in an academic setting such as university, you know, we're there to learn, and learning means admitting sometimes that we are wrong or that we don't know things. We can't be open to learning without intellectual humility. There's some research by a guy called Adam Fetterman who shows that people think it's a bad idea to admit that they're wrong, even when it is very clear they are. But in study after study, people tend to like people who admit they're wrong more than if they don't admit it. They judge them as more competent than those who hide it or deny that they've made mistakes. So all the research is telling us that A, we need to ask for help, and B, yeah, have some academic humility.
And when you get to the very top of academic life, when you're doing your PhD, it's about having a question to explore because you don't know the answer. Isn't it? And finding
yes,
stuff
totally.
It's unique and nobody's explored before. Mm. So when we're thinking about asking for help and admitting when you're stuck or you don't know, it helps you both socially and academically. So Louise and I put together some ideas about what might help with this. So, for instance, you could reach out to tutors with specific questions and requests. And in our previous podcast about asking for help, that was one of the things we did talk about, wasn't it? You might set up a study group where you all share where you're struggling and help each other out. It might be the one lecture in seminar to admit to that you don't understand something. There might be one of them, and watch when you ask, watch everybody else engage in the answer. They'll probably thank you that, you know, you were brave enough to ask, and they'll be very pleased you did. And embrace what we call a growth mindset, believing that you can grow and develop through effort, persistence, and commitment. And lastly, it's recognised that at university, marks of 50-60% can be seen as a good grade. If you look up a lot of university websites, it will tell you that in that first year, you know, if you're doing getting scores of 50-60%, they're saying that you're understanding the basic stuff and you're doing what they would expect. I mean, obviously, you know, you want to kind of improve on that maybe and boost your grades. But it's a common thing that you'll find. I was looking up in Imperial College University, and that's what they were saying. 50% is a good grade in first year. So tip three is going to banish procrastination, perfectionism, and a fear of failure. And you likely know we've talked about procrastination before, and it's kind of one of my favourite subjects. Isn't that interesting? But it's really kind of peak for you as young people, young adults at this age, and not surprising given the level of change, this period of transition, getting used to independent living and learning. You're adjusting to all of this. There's a lot going on, a lot more time that you've got organised that you've not had before. And sometimes also people at your age are just less skilled at regulating themselves. So there's lots of things to say that, yeah, procrastination is quite a common thing for you. And when we talked about it before, we talked about it's full of D's when you were faced with a task. So first of all, there's a discomfort. There's discomfort in thoughts and feelings. So the thoughts might be about, oh, how do I start? This is going to take me forever. I don't know how to do it. What if I fail? Or this is really boring. And the feelings you might have some of those physical sensations that you read as discomfort too. There might be butterflies in your stomach. You might feel a bit your heart racing, or, you know, you might be feeling those emotions of anxiety and feeling frustrated. So that discomfort at the beginning of the task is the first bit into procrastination. What comes next with it, Louise?
Then you might start to feel a bit of distaste at the discomfort. You're wondering, can you tolerate it? And when does it get too much that you then dodge the task, the activity, run away from it?
Yeah, because that's the way you get away from kind of questions of thoughts and feelings that of yourself that aren't pleasant. So you dodge it, which is the third D, and you have to think about what your procrastination favourites. What are you drawn to that temporarily relieves you from that discomfort and your distaste of it? Is it kind of scrolling your phone, calling a friend? Cleaning, even, you know, when we don't really want to, but it's kind of something that might temporarily give us that relief. Do you know your procrastination favorites so that when you start to do this stuff, you know, oh, there it's coming?
And then the final D, the dissatisfaction arrives. You know, when you can't dodge forever and you have to do the task or activity, you know, how does that dissatisfaction show up for you? You notice those thoughts and feelings. Are you making negative judgments about yourself? Are you saying, gosh, I'm so useless, why can't I just get on with it? And oh, there again, missed another deadline. Are you feeling angry? Do you start to direct your anger at someone else or something else, the institution, the university perhaps, the lecturer? Or do you feel guilt about the fact that deep down, I know I should have done it, but I haven't? You know, so this is a cycle that's a well-worn path in chronic procrastinators.
So we've talked about some of these before. So here's some good tips, and think about the one thing that might help you to try and break this cycle. So thinking about the D's above is quite a good thing to do, and understand how this cycle works out for you is a good thing to know. And remember that fight flight response, that threat response that we've talked about, you know, can often be there with those physical feelings. So you can use some deep breathing to calm down. And then there's a challenge response questions to get you going and take action, and then the next action, and then what happens next.
Yeah. And I think often it's a question of just getting started. So you could set a timer for 10, 15 minutes and just do something. And very probably once you start to get into it, you realize, oh, it's not quite so bad. You know, I have kind of blown this up in my mind to be something much worse than it is. And you may just get into the task a bit and want to continue. And that would be surprising and good for you too. And doing that, you know, to help you approach that, chunk the task down to smaller achievable steps. So perhaps that might be what you do in that first 10, 15 minutes. Take the big task and just chunk it down to smaller steps.
When there are times for you that this procrastination comes, and you might know it's always with these kinds of work things that I have to do, plan for what we call a when-then intention. So when I feel the urge to avoid a task, then I will go and sit at my desk and breathe deeply, or then I will take that first step of opening the book, or something that will get you to act into a feeling. And the other thing that is a favorite thing of mine around procrastination is to be compassionate to yourself, because we know in that cycle, on the dissatisfaction bit, we start to be critical about ourselves. So interesting study, when students were procrastinators, one group were taught to be compassionate with yourselves, another group weren't taught anything, just talked to. The group that were compassionate were able to interrupt those cycles more. They were able to bring compassion to themselves rather than being critical. And that was one of the things that broke the cycle for them.
Fantastic. And I think also you can think about your previous studying experiences, because I'm sure procrastination was a feature sometimes then, and ask yourself, well, what helped you to start then and to then continue? Also think about your strengths and how they've helped you in the past and can help you now. And the important thing about using your strengths is that strengths are things that you're good at, so that will help with the task, but also they energize because you're doing something that you feel fairly confident about doing. You're using your things that you're good at. So that helps to energize you to doing the task and feeling more positive about the task as well. And the other thing is, plan to eat the big frog first thing. We talked about that in an earlier podcast too. So think about what's the most important thing to do for each day. Do that first. As you're doing it, imagine how you'll feel when that task is done, when you can put a bit of a tick on it and say, task done. Always feels really good, I think.
And when you've done it, celebrate it. Celebrate it in some way, because celebration reinforces this new habit of getting something done and being pleased about it. It might also be good to remind yourself about why this degree is important, why this bit of work's important. It's all going to account towards that end goal. So it's about making and meaning, isn't it? Mattering and meaning. So what does this task mean to you? Why is it important that you get it done?
Yeah, absolutely. And also remember to ask for help if you're feeling stuck. Back to point two or tip two. You can always email your tutor and say, I'm a bit stuck. Can you give me some guidance, please? That's what they're supposed to be there for. So don't be shy in doing that. Or you could find another student and say, look, I'm struggling a bit with this. Can you help me? Or perhaps we can do this task together. And then also remember to look after your mind. And that means by taking care of yourself, you know, looking after those fundamentals, making sure you're eating well, you're sleeping, and you're connecting with others to help boost your energy levels. So then I wanted to move on and talk a bit about perfectionism. Now, this is a feature that's on the increase in apparently in the UK, the USA and Canada, according to Adam Grant, who's author of a new book called Hidden Potential. And he says the features of perfectionism are, and the reason why we need to not be too much of a perfectionist, is that we lose the ability to see the forest from the trees, i.e. the bigger picture. We focus on the small detail and getting that right. And as we're doing that, we tend to ruminate. Self-shaming can be quite a feature. You know, we're not self-compassionate, especially about learning from our mistakes. We tend to beat ourselves up. You know, we shouldn't make mistakes. We've got to get it all right. As we've already talked about, that's not always a good thing to think. We tend not to stretch ourselves. You know, we stay with what we know rather than move into new and uncertain territory. And avoid failure and risk-taking. Let's not challenge ourselves, because if we challenge ourselves, then we might not be able to be perfect in the solution. And that impacts on learning. And we end up static and in an ever narrowing comfort zone and no expanding expertise. So there are lots of negative, you know, sort of outcomes of perfectionism. So how can we reduce perfectionist tendencies? Well, Elizabeth, what are your suggestions for this?
You know, I think it is goes back to what we've talked about the importance of making mistakes and being open to learning, knowing you're not going to get it all right first time. It's a bit like what we've been talking about. This is a transition. There's likely going to be difficulties and challenges because you've never done it before. And learning's the same. You know, there will be mistakes and learning, because that's what happens when we have new experiences.
Mm.
And when we think about the personal characteristics that help you complete work, maybe it's good to focus on what are the things that help you do well enough. These characteristics are so important to everything kind of you do in the future. And if we think about just even going back a number of years, about there was an idea that was around, certainly when I was learning to be a parent, about the good enough parent. You know, sometimes things just have to be good enough. They don't have to be perfect. I think that's a nice thing. It's good enough. And having that flexibility to know that sometimes, yes, you have to get everything absolutely right, and other times it has to be good enough.
Mm.
And maybe we've got to recognize that any kind of positive outcome takes time to evolve. There are very few overnight successes. And it reminds me of a little bit of research that was done in schools when people were taught about science, and you got all the scientists who are kind of had discovered these amazing things, and you had one group of children who were just told this is what the outcome was, and then you had another group that, you know, understood about the years of toil and slaving over petri dishes, whatever it was. And there were really clear outcomes between those two groups, is that one tried a lot more. They were more open to seeing that you didn't just need to have an overnight success. So it's that practice. It's about keeping going, keeping trying, keeping those baby steps going, because it will get you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Baby steps all the way. So tip four. You need to adjust to the new learning environment. And I think it's really helpful to think about kind of template for yourself as a successful learner. I mean, what will be the characteristics on that template of what you need to be in order to be a successful learner? You know, the first thing to say is you're learning independently with far less guidance and a whole load more self-direction than you probably have done in the past. You need to make the choices and decisions about how deeply you research things, for example, when you stop that research. You know, how many articles are you going to read, and how you then use that information in the research that you're completing. And you're going to have to manage your own deadlines. You're going to have to develop the good working habits and use your time productively. Yeah, and the teaching that you receive in your lectures and your seminars and your tutorials will provide the background into your work, but then you will need to do the further research yourself. And the great thing is you have the freedom to follow what interests you. It may not always contribute directly to perhaps a piece of assessed work, but you really can develop your own interests on your in your own subject, and that will contribute to the more independent work and study that you do later on. So developing those independent study skills, curiosity, following your curiosity and seeing where it leads is really, really a great asset for the future, you know, future years at uni.
And, you know, it might be that you've already got some inquiry skills about asking yourself questions about your subject matter. And it's often those questions we ask ourselves that develop our knowledge and understanding. And that might need to kind of happen at a bigger and a deeper level when you're at university now. You know, we're asking you to ask questions of other people, but ask questions of yourself and what you're learning. That's going to be a very useful thing to do. And work is often iterative, which that means much research has a trial and error approach. Let's test this hypothesis and see how it stacks up. And Louise and I actually went to a conference last Friday, and a researcher was talking about his PhD research. And the results of the research, 7 years of it, were really interesting and were direct opposites of his hypothesis. He could have decided he'd failed, but instead he chose to extend the learning that these findings provided. So to be open to exploration and discovery, success and failure, or disappointment. So there's more questions to be asked, which is one of the things that he found out about. So there was no failure in it. It was more finding out more about something.
And he was able to be incredibly enthusiastic about the results in the end, although he did have a massive dip, he talked about too, when he found that things weren't working out quite as he hoped, as he had expected, I say, rather than hoped. I think the other thing to remember about academic work in universities is, you know, for example, you know, a lot of your lecturers and your research, the research people you're in touch with, will be researching and then writing for academic journals. Yeah, they don't just write one draft and send it off and have it accepted. It gets rewritten and rewritten. People comment on it. It's usually a collaborative effort, and they have to accept quite damaging feedback quite often. And I think that's kind of the mentality I would encourage you to accept as your way of going through. You know, when you're writing your assessments, create your own very first rough draft, one that you wouldn't share with anybody. Leave it for a few days, come back to it, redraft it, then perhaps get a friend involved, a colleague involved, a tutor involved to comment on it, then redraft it, and so on. Now, that is allowed at university. You can do that. It doesn't have to be right first time round. And another thing, you're going to be asked to work in teams. And this is one that I sort of highlight just because I know it's been a real challenge for my daughter, because people tend not to take this seriously. And there is a really serious intent behind it with universities, because they're realizing that as people move out of the university or even stay in the university to work academically for the future, you're going to be working in teams, you're going to be collaborating. And so it's really important to build those valuable team, you know, collaborative skills. And that's why they set these, you know, exercises for you to do. So really, you know, take some focus on those and contribute to those fully. And also remember that while you're expected to work independently, academic staff are there to help. So ask. Recognize, though, that they're not going to chase you. If you don't attend lectures, seminars, then nothing will probably be said. You know, it's up to you now to turn up and do what you have committed to do by signing up for this degree.
So in thinking about establishing routines, then that's tip five. Yeah, it's term one. There's a lot going on. It's fun to socialise. In that context, perhaps work is not so fun or harder to get round to. However, you're at university to study, and the sooner you develop a routine around your course and study, the better. And why? Well, likely you know that answer before I say it, because that routine will help you reduce the number of decisions you need to make. So if it's already planned for you, you just fall in with the plan, fall in with your plan. Routine means you have a structure to your day and you will feel a sense of accomplishment, which is a really positive thing to feel.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really important point, that sense of accomplishment. And you know, leaving it and not getting into work now, as well as not accomplishing much this term, will also mean there's going to be some panic coming up later. You're kind of delaying that panic. And it may be that over Christmas, you end up having to do some work that you didn't really want to have to do over Christmas. So really worth planning about and thinking about that now. As I said before, you may have a team that you're doing work with. And if you don't develop a routine and get that work done, then you're not just letting yourself down, you're letting other people down too. And you might have joined, you know, holiday societies, sports and other topics that you're interested in. And it really pays to make those commitments and activities happen and get involved, because getting involved then creates, you know, a sense of achievement, social connection, lots of really good benefits there. In our Student Voices series, which is episode 11 to 15, I think three of the students emphasise the really positive mental health benefits of routine and getting that established fairly early on. And also, if you've got a routine, then you're more likely to get to bed at a reasonable time, sometimes, okay, not all the time, sometimes, eat well, and build in some rest and recovery, which is really important to your mental health and, you know, the ability to focus and work and study well. So lots of good reasons for developing a routine.
It is so important, isn't it? So let's summarise on our tips today. So tip one was challenge and stretches are normal. Try to embrace them and become anti-fragile. Tip two, ask for help and embrace academic humility. Tip three, try and banish procrastination, perfectionism, and fear of failure. Tip four, adjust to this new learning environment. And tip five, establish some kind of routine, is that's going to help you in so many ways.
So thanks so much for listening today. We hope that this has been a practical and helpful episode. Remember, if you want to go deeper, we've created this special online space where you can go and review the content of this episode using some really handy show notes. They're packed with reflection questions and some additional resources designed to support you on this uni journey. You can gain access now for free by going to successfulstudenttransitions.com/lean-in. It's a space for you to reflect, learn, and plan for your university success. So that's all for now. We'll be back next week with the next episode. But for now, we wish you a great week. Bye-bye for now. And now for the legal bits. The information contained in this podcast is for information purposes only. The content is not intended to act as a substitute for professional advice. Please do not delay in seeking professional help for any medical or mental health condition. Use of the information on this podcast and associated materials is at the user's own risk.